Well, good evening, everyone. It's good to see you tonight. Good to see each one. Tonight's going to be kind of more of a class period, really, as again tonight we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about just the geography of Israel, reading a passage or two from there. We've spent some time in the past just talking about, as we're making our trip through Israel, we talked last time we did this about Caesarea Maritime, the city that Herod the Great, I was going to say built. He didn't really build it. He didn't start it, but he greatly improved it during the time that he was king. And we looked at some of the features of that last time and talked about some biblical events that took place in Caesarea Maritime. And this evening on our journey, I guess you would say, we're leaving Caesarea Maritime and going on up the coast of the Mediterranean Sea to Mount Carmel. But along the way, we begin by looking at the aqueduct that comes all the way from Mount Carmel to the city of Caesarea Philippi. It's quite an amazing feat. What did I say wrong? Yeah. Caesarea Maritime. Not Caesarea Philippi. Caesarea Maritime. Big difference. Caesarea Maritime is the one by the Mediterranean Sea. And so there's this aqueduct that was built 2,000 years ago that would bring fresh water, drinking water, from the base or kind of the lower part of Mount Carmel all the way to the city, Caesarea Maritime. And, you know, to think of it from an engineering standpoint absolutely amazes me. You know, I still can't get exactly the mileage, but it's between like 8 and 12 miles depending on who measures it, I guess, from where it flows. And the drop of this aqueduct is only 200 feet over that entire distance. And yet it steadily flowed water to the city. And then it kept the city in all of the drinking water and water that was needed in town, you know, for years. And so it was an above the ground aqueduct. And it was this is called the higher aqueduct. There's a lower one too that kind of skirts along the ground. It came from some springs that were not as good. It was not for drinking. It's what was used for irrigating fields and things such as that. But just to look at this is amazing to me, what's left of it. It's not intact all the way. But it goes, you know, in some portions for a good ways. In fact, as you drive along the highway going up to Mount Carmel at times, sometimes our guide would say, look out over here, you can still see the aqueduct, and you see a little portion of it here or there. It's an engineering feat. It's a marvel. It fulfilled a needed purpose for the city of Caesarea Maritime. It was another one of the great accomplishments of King Herod the Great. And it's still pretty to look at. I mean, just to look at this the structure, it was just something that was just amazing to me. It's one of the more amazing things we saw on this trip. And it was just pretty. It's right next to the Mediterranean Sea as it comes into the city of Caesarea Maritime. So I thought that might just be interesting as an introduction into some things about Mount Carmel, because that's where this water came from. It was from the springs on the south side of Mount Carmel. And that's where we're going to spend our time tonight. It's talking about Mount Carmel. Here's a city, or here's a mountain that's about 1,740 feet high. And while that doesn't seem real high to us, because if you compare that to Mount Mitchell, you know, an hour up the road at 6,800 feet, what's 1,700 feet? But in a region that is pretty flat, 1,700 feet stands up pretty tall. And you can see it from some distance away. This photo here kind of shows, I believe it's the south, kind of the southeast side of Mount Carmel, kind of looking across the Jezreel Valley. And so you got Mount Carmel, and you got the Jezreel Valley. And from the top of Mount Carmel, you can look off, and you can see some other mountains that you would recognize from, you know, biblical stories that we'll see here in just a moment. But we're just going to try to get in our mind's eye a picture of what Mount Carmel is and how does it play into the Bible story. Because it's mentioned a number of times. And not just Mount Carmel, but the immediate surrounding areas of Mount Carmel. In particular, the Jezreel Valley. We want to talk about that just a little bit. So just trying to get in mind
where we have been. You know, we've talked about Jerusalem kind of being our starting point. We've had the kids kind of looking at the maps. They've got Jerusalem down real good. And then if we can find our way to Caesarea Maritime up here. And then the aqueduct that kind of goes along the coast up here to the base of Mount Carmel that we've talked about some tonight. Mount Carmel is one of these mountains right here in about this area. And some have called this little mountain range the Mount Carmel Mountain Range. Now listen, it's not a mountain range at all like what we think of here. I mean, we have the Smoky Mountain Range, we have the Black Mountain Range, and several others in and around the Asheville area that are a whole lot more prominent than this would be. But in, again, a region that it is kind of flat through that Jezreel Valley, even the 1,700 feet, mountains stand up pretty tall. And you can see them from some distance. But we want to notice here for tonight and for some other stories that may come out later as we study our way through Israel, is here's Mount Carmel again. And then this area here, the Jezreel Valley. There's a number of events that take place in the Jezreel Valley, if it's nothing more than just at times, you know, biblical characters passing through. But there's more that happens there than that. But maybe we'll see in some pictures tonight why it was such an important area. There were several battles that took place there. It was kind of a sought-after area. It was desirable for a lot of things. Well, for one thing, anytime someone was traveling from, you know, from the Jordan River Valley up this way to the northern part of Israel, well, that's where they would go. Because that would kind of run in between these mountains as it goes right through here. And so it was like it was the main road that went there. So if you controlled the Jezreel Valley, you controlled a very sizable area and a strategically important area. So it's important we know about some of those things because as you read through the Bible, you know, we'll find that this area comes into a play a number of times. We've talked about Mount Carmel, the Jezreel Valley. You notice in here as well on this map up here again, Mount Tabor, Mount Gilboa. We see those in the Bible story play out a number of times. And in fact, we'll look at a picture in a moment. If you can try to keep the map in your mind a little bit. From the top of Mount Carmel, we can see, just barely, but we can see Mount Tabor and Mount Gilboa in the distance. We'll see that in just a moment as we come through. You know, I've wondered some, and I can't help but think about these things when you read about Mount Carmel and the Jezreel Valley. You know, just if Mount Carmel could talk, I mean, the things that it has seen, the events that have taken place close by there. If you had the opportunity to sit for centuries on the top of Mount Carmel and just watch some of the things that would happen and events that would take place, it would just have been amazing. You know, you could write a book about it. So in fact, we have one. And it tells us some stories about some events that take place there. Even in more modern times, events that have taken place there. This is kind of an aerial view of this area here. This would be the top of Mount Carmel. This is a monastery right here on top. We'll talk about that, you know, in just a moment. And from this view, this would be from the east, looking in a more westerly direction, because you can see portions of the Mediterranean Sea over that way. So Caesarea Maritime, where we were just at, is down along this area. That's where we just came from. And so, as we get up on the mountain, and we didn't hike the mountain, we took a bus up there. And from our parking area, you walk uphill a little ways to come to this area where there's a monastery. Well, this is interesting, and it needs just a little bit of explanation. Obviously, it wasn't there in the days of the Bible story, but it came along somewhere after that. And so when you come up here to this Carmelite monastery, as it is called, you know, named after its patron saint, they would say, Elijah, because some of the events that took place when Elijah was there, and we're going to talk about those tonight. Just so we know something about this. You know, we have here what is called the world headquarters of the Carmelites. Now, that is a religious order of the Catholic Church. That's kind of where this came from. It was founded on this site because, you know, they claimed that it was the location of Elijah's cave. is what they have said. You know, in fact, there were some who said when it was founded here, that Elijah at times came to that cave and lived there or hid out there. Well, there's no documentary proof that says anything about that, but that's their tradition. You know, that's why they say they have built this monastery there. And this goes back to about the 12th century or so, you know, that this took place. Now, the building that's there now, the main portion, of course, is much newer than that. It's not 12th century design or age. It's been built, it's been torn down and rebuilt. There have been battles there. Different ones have claimed the territory, you know, through the years. But it seems as though it was the Crusaders that staked the greatest claim to the area. And I really couldn't find anything that told me exactly when this building was put there, when it was built, other than finding that the claim was it's built on top of Elijah's cave. And again, I can't find anything that proves that, but that's their story. This is their monastery. And so I guess they can have whatever story they want that goes with that. Well, there are some that say that when this began, this monastery, there were hermit monks that lived in some of the caves that are on the surrounding side, on the more rocky side of Mount Carmel, and that they drew their inspiration from the prophet Elijah. And that's where this monastery came from, and such things there. They have a statue out front, and one of the first things you see when you come up of Elijah. And of course, there was a battle, you could say, that was waged between Elijah and the prophets of Baal. We'll read about that here tonight in just a moment. And that's what kind of brings us all about, this monastery and the events that have taken place. Well, there's a pretty good view from the top of Mount Carmel. In fact, it's very interesting. In fact, this isn't my picture. I picked this one up from online. The day that we were there, it was pretty hazy. It was hard to see very far, and yet our guide said, this is a good day. Some days you can't see half this far. We could just barely make out Mount Tabor and Mount Gilboa. But this picture here I found is actually much clearer than what I have. There at that monastery, on top of the gift shop, there's a platform that you can climb up on, and you can almost get a 360-degree view off the top of Mount Carmel. So that's kind of interesting, and it's a very beautiful view. Here we are looking out over the Jezreel Valley, and it is beautiful. I mean, you can think and you can understand why that was such sought-after property, so to speak. The different ones would battle over the ownership of the Jezreel Valley, because it was rich, it was fertile. It's still that way today. In fact, when you stand on top and you look out through there, you can kind of see, I know it's way on out there. You know, it's hard to see it in the picture. But the Jezreel Valley basically goes about 20 miles in length and kind of 12 to 15 miles in its width, depending on what it's having to go around. And to a great degree, that Jezreel Valley, you know, is a lot of agriculture. No, there are as well several towns that are built in it, some that go back to, or at least the origin of it goes back to biblical times. And it is pretty. You can see right here in this part, off the side of the hill, there's looks like an orchard there. Well, actually, it's olive grove is what it is. We haven't talked about the olives yet a whole lot, and not a lot tonight. We'll see some other pictures later on in some places where there's just a lot of olives. But there were several groves on Mount Carmel, this just being one that kind of stood out, and I wanted you to see that. In the distance here, if you really look out there, and I know it's going to be hard for you to see, you can just barely make out in there Mount Tabor and Mount Gilboa. I was trying to figure out how far away those were, and I think they're about 12 to 15 miles away, you know, from Mount Carmel. And, of course, those are mountains that come up in the biblical story, you know, on some occasion, and you can see them from here. Again, just think for a moment. You know, if you had lived for centuries on top of this mountain, so to speak, and seen some of the events that would take place, don't you just wonder who all has passed through that valley? I mean, anybody who was anyone who was passing from one side, you know, from the Jordan Valley to the Mediterranean Sea through Samaria or anything on the northern side of Israel, you went through that Jezreel Valley. That was the way to go. That's the main road. That's the main thoroughfare even today. On that side of Israel, that's where the main road goes, right through there. And so you think about what all has been seen in this valley. Again, just the map up here so we can get our bearings straight. You know, if we look at Mount Carmel here, and in that distance way up there is Mount Tabor and Mount Gilboa, that you can just barely make out right here in the photograph. And so looking again down the hill, this would be kind of looking on the east side of Mount Carmel into that Jezreel Valley, and looking at it there today, a little bit closer picture. You can see there's a major highway that goes through the bottom. But I want you to look as well. You can see here that there is a river, or at least a brook that goes through here. And the best I can figure is that would be the Kishon, what was called the Kishon River. It doesn't look like much of a river today. Now, of course, I mean, we're several miles away from it in this photograph. And it's bigger than what it looks like in this photograph, because it is some distance away. But somehow in the Bible story, I've always kind of thought of that river as being bigger. At least it always looked bigger on the maps that I've seen. Maybe it never has been bigger. I don't know. You know, but there it is. At least that's what it seems like that would be right there. Here's a little closer picture of that same scene. And you can see the highway. There's a major highway. We'd call it like an interstate is what it looks like. And you can see the river just beyond the highway down there. And keep in mind that Kishon River, because we'll read about it tonight in the story we're going to read. It comes into play in what we see tonight. And so, again, just backing up a little bit and looking off that east side at the Jezreel Valley, thinking about Elijah and the events that took place in his life, the battles for the territory in Jezreel Valley, and some of those who have traveled through, Jesus went through that region, even in his ministry. Now, this is looking off the other side of Mount Carmel, looking more to the southwest. It's not looking directly west. It's more southwest. And it's real hard to see in the photo because it was so hazy on the day we were there. But basically, this over here, this area there, and a little bit down in there, you might be able to just barely pick out the Mediterranean Sea. And where we have just come from in our journey is down this way here, where Caesarea Maritime would be, you know, about 10 miles away. And so that just gives us a view off the other side of Mount Carmel. Well, let's think about at least one Bible story that took place in this area here, in Mount Carmel in particular, and I think some events that took place over that east side. If you'll take your Bibles, and let's go to 1 Kings chapter 18. 1 Kings chapter 18. Elijah is the prophet of God. And Jehovah God has kept him busy with just a number of things. In particular, addressing King Ahab. Ahab was a wicked king. Just very much so a wicked king. And as we're stepping into the middle of this story, he was the king of the northern tribe of Israel. As we're stepping into this story here, Jehovah God has stopped the rain. Now, Elijah's the one that gets blamed on that from Ahab. And Ahab, you know, when he comes back in contact with Elijah again, actually God sent Elijah to see Ahab. Ahab addresses him as, you are a troubler, is what he says. You're a troublemaker, is basically, you know, what he was saying. But Elijah said, we're looking at 1 Kings 18 and verse 18. Elijah says, I have not made trouble for Israel, Elijah replied. But you and your father's family have. You have abandoned the Lord's commands and have followed the Baals. Now summon the people from all over Israel to meet me on Mount Carmel. And bring the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table. I mean, here we have at least 850 prophets that have been addressed. Now, the main call, what we're going to see happen in this story, is mainly an event with the prophets of Baal. But it's interesting to me how Elijah kind of turns this around after Ahab has addressed him as, "You troubler of Israel." No, I'm not the one that's causing the trouble. You are the problem, Ahab. You are the one that you've caused your own problem, is what he's saying. The issue was, the problem was that he wasn't listening to Jehovah God. And that instead he's been influenced by the prophets of Baal and Asherah. And so there was consequences because of that. In verse 20, Ahab sent word throughout all Israel and assembled the prophets on Mount Carmel. That's where we're going, Mount Carmel. And Elijah went before the people and said, "How long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal is God, follow him." There's a great measure of confidence in what Elijah is saying. Because Elijah knows that Baal has no power at all. But Jehovah God has all power. And in fact, the problem that Israel is dealing with right now, that is the lack of rain for a long period of time, is because Jehovah God is the one who put the stop to it. And that's what he told Elijah. So Elijah now has been gone and out of the story for some time. But now Jehovah God is ready to make his point to King Ahab and has called Elijah back to go find Ahab. Now they've had this point of confrontation. Bring those prophets of Baal over here. Meet me at Mount Carmel. And when the prophets come and all the people of Israel, it says all the people. I can't imagine that just every person in Israel is there. But there's a representation from all over Israel that has come to Mount Carmel. I have wondered at times just how many people are there. I'm not really sure what that means, all people. You know, is it just, again, just a representation from different parts of Israel? I really don't know. But I think it's a crowd. And there are many now who have come to Mount Carmel. And when Elijah speaks, I love his point. How long will you waver between two opinions? You know, how long are you going to straddle this fence? How long are you going to try to call yourself Israel, the children of God, and serve the Baals? How long are you going to try to do this? And he could very well say to him at that point, "How's it working out for you? Because it's not working out good at all." You know, and it's like, I don't think that Elijah's really just trying to rub this in their face necessarily. Well, maybe a little bit. How long are you going to waver between two opinions? How long are you going to keep trying to straddle the middle? And how is it working for you? It's not so good, is it? So this is the message from Elijah, the prophet. Verse 22. Then Elijah said to them, "I am the only one of the Lord's prophets left, but Baal has 450 prophets. Get two bulls for us. Let them choose one for themselves. Let them cut it into pieces and put it on the wood, but not set fire to it. I will prepare the other bull and put it on the wood, but not set fire to it. Then you call on the name of your God, and I will call on the name of the Lord, the God who answers by fire. He is God." So he says, here's the test. Here's how we will know who is God. Elijah has all confidence because he knows. I mean, I don't know that he knows exactly how this is all going to work out, but he knows that Baal has no power at all, and Jehovah God has all power, the maker and creator of all things, he who gives breath, life, and everything. And so he has all confidence. Then the people said, "What you say is good. Okay, all right, it's a deal. We'll do that." Verse 25. And Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, "Choose one of the bulls and prepare it first, since there are so many of you. Call on the name of your God, but do not light the fire." So they took the bull given them and prepared it. Then they called on the name of Baal from morning till noon. I like this part of the story. It always makes me smile when I try to picture these 450 prophets. We are on top of Mount Carmel now, or somewhere on Mount Carmel. I don't know if we're exactly on the top or where. You know, there's actually some stone outcroppings on just off the side. I forget which side. I think it's on the southeast side, but that may not be right. Now, some have said this was an area where there had been altars made. Now, it's been, you know, thousands of years, and things get moved around. Is that exactly right or not? We don't really know. But we know somewhere there on Mount Carmel, this event is unfolding. And so they called the name of Baal from morning till noon. Can't you imagine that by the time noon came, that they're already getting give out? I mean, this has been going on for hours now. And wouldn't you think that you'd be a little frustrated at that point? That out of 450 prophets, somehow their God has not responded to them? Because after all, this is a pretty important event. This is one of those, you know, kind of high-profile events now. You know, because the king has helped call this all together. There are people from all over Israel that is there. It's time for their God to show some, flex a little muscle, show some power here. And they kept on crying out here, verse 26. They said, oh Baal, answer us, they shouted. But there was no response. No one answered. And they danced around the altar that they made. And at noon, I like this part. At noon, Elijah began to taunt them. Shout louder, he says. Surely he is a god. Perhaps he is in deep thought or busy traveling. Maybe he is sleeping and must be awakened. So they shouted louder and they slashed themselves with swords and spears, as was their custom, until their blood flowed. Midday passed, and they continued their frantic prophesying until the time for the evening sacrifice. Still nothing's happened. 450 prophets of Baal, as they got louder and louder calling upon their God, and nothing has happened, and they're frantic, and now they're cutting themselves. You know, and can you get a picture of this as they have danced around crawling out for their God, but there was no response. No one answered. No one paid attention. Verse 30. Then Elijah said to all the people, come here to me. And they came to him, and he repaired the altar of the Lord, which was in ruins. Elijah took 12 stones, one for each of the tribes descended from Jacob, to whom the word of the Lord had come, saying, your name shall be Israel. With the stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord. And he dug a trench around it, large enough to hold 2 seahs of seed. Now, what's that? Hold 2 seahs of seed. Well, a seah, I think it's basically supposed to hold about 13 quarts. And so, I mean, we have several gallons of worth of a trench here around this altar is what it is. Verse 33, he arranged the wood, cut the bowl into pieces and laid it on the wood. Then he said to them, fill 4 large jars with water and pour it on the offering and on the wood. Now keep in mind that the prophets of Baal have called all day for their God to bring fire upon their altar. And even with dry sticks of wood, nothing has happened. Elijah's confident. And so rebuilt this altar and put the wood on it, have dug a trench around it. And then he says, you know, to them, he says, verse 33, he arranged the wood, cut the bull in pieces and laid it on the wood. And he said to them, fill 4 large jars with water and pour it on the offering and the wood. Do it again, he said. And they did it again. Do it a third time, he ordered. And they did it a third time. The water ran down around the altar and even filled the trench. At the time of sacrifice, the prophet Elijah stepped forward and prayed, O Lord God of Abraham and Isaac and Israel, let it be known today that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant, have done all these things at your command. Answer me, O Lord, answer me, so these people will know that you, O Lord, are God, and you are turning their hearts back. Then fire of the Lord fell and burned up the sacrifice, the wood, the stones, the soil, and licked up the water in the trench. Now, what kind of picture in your mind do you have there? I mean, there was one time here that Elijah made his plea to God. One time. And God responded. And it's explained to us, really, when Elijah said that, you know, I've done this at the Lord's command. This is what he's told me to do. And so since he has done what the Lord had commanded him to do, the Lord responds. And it's immediate. And it's dramatic. Verse 38, then the fire of the Lord fell and burned up the sacrifice, the wood, the stones, the soil, and licked up the water in the trench. And when all the people saw this, they fell prostrate and cried, "The Lord, He is God. The Lord, He is God." Then Elijah commanded them, "Seize the prophets of Baal. Don't let anyone get away." They seized them. And Elijah had them brought down to the Kishon Valley and slaughtered there. You kind of have a picture where that took place, that Kishon Valley down there by the Kishon River we saw. You know, so they went off that side of the mountain from wherever they were, and they went down there, and those 450 prophets of Baal were slaughtered there. Pretty amazing story, isn't it? Jehovah God has once again demonstrated His power and His faithfulness, because He's going to bring rain back to the land again as He had promised. It was in His time, because now He has taught the lesson. In fact, I guess there's multiple lessons that have been taught in this period of time. It was the Lord Jehovah God who stopped the rain. It will be Jehovah God who once again starts the rain as well. Now the people have seen a demonstration of the power of God that's sufficient to convince them of the power of Jehovah God. And now the prophets of Baal are no more, not to be such a plague on the people as what they have been. Verse 41. And Elijah said to Ahab, "Go, eat and drink, for there is the sound of heavy rain." They haven't heard that in a long time. So Ahab went off to eat and drink, but Elijah climbed to the top of Carmel, bent down to the ground, and put his face between his knees. Where is this rain? You see, Elijah has said to the king, you know, the rain is going to come. Where's this rain? And so he's going to pray to Jehovah God. And so he falls on his face, puts his face between his knees, verse 43. "Go and look toward the sea," he said to the servant, and his servant went and looked. You remember from the top of Mount Carmel, looking not in the direction of the Jezreel Valley, but turning and looking the other way. Remember, we could just barely see there through the haze, the Mediterranean Sea. And so Elijah is praying for God to send this rain, tells the servant, "Go look and see, can you see anything coming?" And so a servant went and looked, but he came back and he says, "There's nothing there." Seven times Elijah said, go back and look. The seventh time the servant reported, "There's a small cloud, as small as a man's hand, rising from the sea." Well, at least that was something. Something is happening. It goes on to say, and so Elijah said, "Go." Elijah has confidence again. "Go tell Ahab, hitch up your chariot and go down before the rain stops you. Get off this mountain. Go on, get on now before this rain stops you." Can't you think that maybe that servant was saying, "But the rain's not even close"? And what would Ahab think? "We haven't seen rain in years. You know, I'm not afraid of rain. It's as dry as it can be." verse 45, "Meanwhile, the sky grew black with clouds. The wind rose, and heavy rain came on Ahab, and Ahab rode off to Jezreel." Jezreel was a town that was down the mountain in the Jezreel Valley where we were looking. Verse 46, "The power of the Lord came upon Elijah, and tucking his cloak into his belt, he ran ahead of Ahab all the way to Jezreel." I'd like to have seen that, wouldn't you? And wouldn't you like to have liked to have seen Ahab? He had a head start in his chariot. And here comes Elijah screaming by him and leads him all the way to Jezreel. Now, with the scenes of Mount Carmel in your mind, can you picture the story a little more? Can you see how some of those events unfolded? You can just see the scene, can't you? Doesn't that help to understand the story? It does for me. And through this Bible story, we are reminded once again of the great power of God. That He has power to do all that He has promised and all that He has said that He will do. And He has demonstrated that power time and again. We need to keep in mind and we need to listen to all that God says. Because Jehovah God is God Almighty. And He has always demonstrated His power from the beginning of time. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. We have seen God's power demonstrated, and we still see it. We witness that today. And the Bible stories like this remind us of the great power of God. Maybe as we begin our new week, it's stories like this that will inspire and encourage and increase our faith and helps to be ready and prepared for the week to come. I'd said this is going to be like a class because I'd actually thought I was going to stop and I would be saying at some point, "You have questions," but I never said that one time. But do you have any questions? Any comments that you would make about what we've covered tonight, what we've seen? The Baals, right. Exactly right. Yeah, God proves Himself over and over again as really and truly the God of all. Good thoughts. Other comments or questions? All right. As we dismiss tonight, Daryl's got a song I believe he's going to lead us in, just kind of a dismissal song, and after that song, we'll be led in prayer and then dismissed.